on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. It is Wednesday, April 23rd, 2025. I'm Lou Guerrero, and I'll be here with you for this entire show as we answer your questions and bring you some of the burning news information that we have seen today through this week, as well as some economic data that is always an important backdrop to what is happening in markets. And as we've seen, and as we will continue to see, this year is no different from any other year, as it brings fresh challenges, unforeseen challenges, and consequences that will be felt for years to come. And because of that, it is critical that you do not lose focus. Now, before we move forward, I want to drop a little something right at the start of the podcast, and that is that coming up on Wednesday, April 30th at 1 p.m. Pacific time, which is 1 week from today, Justin and I will be hosting a free Invest Talk Wealth webinar. It's all about unlocking the power of custom indexing so you can take your investment strategy to the next level. We'll drill down into how to navigate business transitions, a plan for long-term success. Other topics will include management and diversification of concentrated investment positions with precision. Maybe you belong to a company where you get those stock options and you want to have a well-diversified portfolio. Custom indexing can help you with that. And we'll also touch on how we can align your investments with your values in order to prioritize what's most important to you. Once again, that is all happening next Wednesday, April 30th. It is free. All you need to do is go to investtalk.com and register now. All right, back to the show. Now, as always, we have a mix of educational items, mix of actionable items that should hopefully help you throughout your day-to-day investing lives. But because the most important part of this show is answering your finance and investment questions, let's tackle our first question now. Oh, looks like we have our first live call of the day, actually. So let's go to Jordan from Dana Point, who has a question about PRIM.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for taking my call. PRIM, PRIM. I've owned it for a while. It's still doing pretty good. I'm just wondering, got more room to run or if I should trim it?
Sure. And how large is it in terms of your overall portfolio?
Less than 3%.
Okay. So for those of you at home, Primoris Services Corporation, PRIM is the ticker. It is a specialty contractor in North America. Pretty much they offer construction, engineering, and maintenance services through their utilities, energies, and renewables segment. Through the utilities and their energy and renewables segments. And so over the past year, this company has been doing pretty well, especially relative to the rest of the market, up 27%. And that's in spite of it being down 34.41% over the past 3 months. Now, in the past month or so, they've been going through a little bit of a leadership transition. And it's also important to note, as I like to do when we're talking about names and earnings season, that we should see some earnings from this company pretty soon, just in a couple weeks now. 3 weeks out is where we are. But looking back towards previous quarters, they've had some pretty strong performance. And that has driven, primarily been the driving force of the appreciation of their price for the better part of the past year. Their growth, stellar, right? From $3 billion in 2019 to about $6.3 billion last year, more than doubled in a five-year span, 15.4% on an annualized basis, and to grow again by another 10% is where they're projected headed into 2025. In that time, their margins have expanded a little bit, though their business is in a tighter margin area, right? Around 2 to 3% is what you typically expect to see here. Their margin, net margin last year, about 2.8%, projected to go to 3.1% this upcoming year. Now, in terms of company size, it's a relatively small company, about $3 billion. Doesn't have much debt on its balance sheet, about $1.1 billion in debt, though, down about $2 billion from the previous year. Cash flow is improving. Profitability, like I said, is improving. And over the past 2 months, it's had solid earnings upgrades. And so it's currently trading about 12.4 times forward-looking earnings. Doesn't look too expensive to me. Again, it's had this little bit of a drawdown over the past 3 months or so, and it's been a pretty steady drawdown, but it looks like it's found a little bit of support from a technical basis there. So overall, what I'm seeing is a company that maybe stands to slow down a little bit, given what's going on macroeconomically with tariffs and what have you, and what the knock-on effect that could have on construction and engineering practices. But overall, it's a solid company. Cash flow is headed in the right direction. Profitability is headed in the right direction, and it's not too expensive. So I think it's still a good company to hold on to. That is Primoris Services Corporation, ticker PRIM. Now, we've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this question. How much money do Americans think they need to retire? A recent survey explored Americans' perceptions of the ideal retirement savings amount, but it also highlighted the gap between expectations and reality. Also, we'll touch on how, despite an apparent U-turn today, in trade tensions with China, what you could still be seeing is a drawn-out capital flight from the U.S. How might that affect markets? How might that affect the global economy? We'll also touch on something that companies have to think about anytime there starts to be a little bit of a slowdown. And so credit card companies are starting to think about what happens if there's a downturn. What happens if people stop paying their debt? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on the Treasury Secretary, who mentioned today that the China tariffs are not sustainable. How seriously should we take that? Certainly the market seemed to react positively to that. We also have questions from the Voice Bank ready to play, including one on using investment apps, as well as one on AGCO, which is AGCO Corp. And we also have some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, we've already had one live call and we'd love to hear more today. Now we're going to do a short break. And on the other side, we'll look at today's market activity and answer more of your questions here on InvestTalk.
April is Financial Literacy Month. And KPP Financial is offering a special opportunity to enhance your financial knowledge. For a limited time, you can receive the first 3 months of the KPP Premium newsletter absolutely free. The newsletter brings you expert insights and economic analysis straight from the KPP leadership team. It covers market trends, stock ideas, portfolio management tips, and consumer finance news. And here's how you get your free, complimentary 3 month subscription. Visit investtalk.com and use the code KPPFLM. Offer ends April 30th. And tell your friends about the all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, Wednesday, April 30th. It's all happening online and it's free. Pre-register now at investtalk.com. The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here, taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. It was a positive day all around. U.S. stocks higher, though ending off of their best levels for the day. And that comes on the back of what we saw on Monday. So I'm losing track of days already on Monday, which was a positive day as well. The Dow up 1.07%, S&P 500 up 1.67%, NASDAQ up 2.5%, and the Russell 2000 up 1.53%. Mag 7 names leading the way today. Tesla, the notable standout, in spite of some poor reporting from the day before after the close. Other outperformers included semis, internet names, credit cards, cruise lines, hotels, and copper. Looks like underperformers included energy, building materials, telecoms, and utilities. Looking at the dollar index was up 90 basis points. It was on pace for the best day year to date. Gold, which has had quite the run over the past 2 years, down 3.7%, putting it back below that $3,300 an ounce level. Crude oil ended down 2.2%. Reason why? Well, there were some headlines that several OPEC countries are looking to potentially accelerate output for the next couple quarters. And so what really drove the global risk on were comments from the president. He said after the close on Tuesday that he had no intention of firing Fed Chair Powell. He signaled that tariffs on China will come down substantially if the two sides start to reach an agreement, though they won't go to zero, was of note. And there are also reports, media reports this morning, that suggested the White House was considering slashing Chinese tariffs by more than 50% to reduce trade tensions. Now, with that being said, a 50% slash still puts them at about 60, 70% tariff on China. Even Bessent himself, the Treasury Secretary, said that the Chinese tariffs would not come down unilaterally and that a full trade deal might even take 2 to 3 years. So is there a market overreaction here? Maybe. Now on the macro front, we got April flash composite PMIs a bit weaker than what the consensus expected. March new home sales printed a little bit stronger. The Fed's beige book said that activity is little changed from the previous year, though we should start to see that trickle in moving forward. Looking ahead, durable goods orders for March, as well as weekly jobless claims and existing home sales, will be out tomorrow. And Friday brings the final University of Michigan consumer sentiment for the month of April. All right, let's keep things moving and get to another caller question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Jay from Long Island. I had a question about SPG, Simon Property Group. It's a REIT that I've been holding for a couple of years now. Got in like the mid 80s range. I'm wondering if I should take profits with the looming tariffs and the effects on retail, or if it's something it's worth holding on to. Look forward to hearing your thoughts. Thanks.
Simon Property Group, ticker SPG, is a real estate investment trust or REIT. They specialize in the ownership of shopping malls, dining, entertainment, and mixed-use destinations. Now, year-to-date, they're down about 11%, about 10.99%, down 12.34% over the past 3 months. And they've been underperforming their industry this year by 8.2%. And the reason why that probably is as you continue to have a ramp-up in tensions, as you continue to have a potentially weakening economy, well, the businesses whose properties that a company like SPG, Simon Property Group, owns are probably going to be asymmetrically hurt by consumers having less money to spend on entertainment, on dining, and on shopping. And so it stands to reason that when people are seeking income, well, they're more likely to stay away from REITs like this one. In fact, it's even underperforming the S&P 500 by about 2.4% year to date. Now, from a dividend perspective, pretty solid, about 5.5% dividend yield, which is where it's been over the past 3 years. And in terms of debt, though, $22 billion in debt on a $61 billion market cap. So not too much leverage there. Now, price to funds from operations, it's at about its average, though a little expensive compared to where it's been over the past 5 years. But I think when you look at situations like this, right, when you think about what is likely to boost REITs, right? A defined, definite path of rates. If yields on bonds are going up, well, then people are less likely to put their money in REITs because if you can get similar income in a quote-unquote safer way through U.S. Treasuries or through investment-grade corporate bonds, well, you're more likely to allocate there, right? That's why typically when rates have a defined path and a defined path downward, REITs tend to do better. But I think it goes back to what you exactly nailed on the head when you asked this question. How might this be affected by the tariffs? How might this be affected by a weakening economy? And so it's not just specific to Simon Property Group. I think any retail REITs is not a good subsector of REITs for you to be in at the moment. That is Simon Property Group, ticker SPG, gonna have to pass. Now, I mentioned it at the top of the show that we will be doing an InvestTalk Wealth webinar on Wednesday, April 30th. It'll be on custom indexing, which I think is a hot topic. Oftentimes, clients have come to us, listeners have asked about what direct indexing is, and we're going to be talking all about it next Wednesday. A quick preview, though, is essentially, it is a strategy that we at KPP have launched, similar to what other RIAs are doing. And our goal is to mimic an index or a benchmark with help with taking into consideration individual investor preferences and doing the most we can to maximize your after-tax return. We'll be diving into all of those things, how it can help you plan for business transitioning, sell your real estate, and keep up with the market while tax loss harvesting along the way. That all happens next Wednesday. Go over to investtalk.com to sign up. Now we're going into a break, and still to come, my main focus point and more answers to your questions here on Invest Talk.
The numbers are in. Invest Talk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. And there's a simple reason. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today concerns this question. How much money do Americans think they need to retire? And so the core of this goes to a couple of things. One is, what is the expectation? But the other is also, what is the reality? And so let's start with what the expectation is. Now, Americans believe that $1.26 million is what they need to retire comfortably. Now, that's down about $200,000 from last year's estimate. But how does that bear out in reality with where most people are? Well, the reality is that one quarter, one in four, 25% of Americans with retirement savings have saved only 1 year or less than their current income. A huge gap between where they are now and where they expect to need to be or where they should be. Now, Fidelity gives some recommendations, and this isn't always a perfect rule, but generally speaking, Fidelity says that you need about 10 times your annual salary by the age of 67 in order to be able to retire comfortably. And you should probably also have about 1 times your annual salary by the age of 30. Now, for about half of Americans, they think that regardless of what they have, that they're going to outlive those savings. And so that adds another layer of not just psychological, but financial insecurity. How does it break down by generation? Well, Gen X, so those who are 45 to 60, on average, or I'm sorry, about half of Gen X have saved no more than 3 times their income, far short of what the benchmark suggests. Most Gen Xers now expect they will need to actually continue to work into retirement, far past retirement age, in order to continue to fund their lifestyles. Interestingly enough, even though that's the case, on average, people are reporting that they believe they will be retiring sooner, despite the fact that they actually don't have the savings to do so. Now, millennials have fallen more into the category of Gen Xers in that they aren't as prepared for their retirement. So Gen Z, who is nowhere near retirement, right? We're looking at people under the age of 29. I think 18 to 29 is about where Gen Z is. What do they think? Well, over 60% of Gen Zers believe they will be financially ready for retirement earlier than their traditional retirement age. And this puzzle becomes very complicated, because the two most uncertain things about retirement are how much money you're going to need to spend, what your consumption is going to look like. But then there's also the other piece of the puzzle. How long are you going to live? And so a lot of this advice traditionally comes from lower expected lifespans. And so as people get healthier, as medicine becomes better, as people live longer, the gap between what people have saved and what they need to save is only growing. Add in variables like increased cost of living, like inflation, like the retirement age, you can see how something like this can become daunting. But regardless, it's not always going to be the case for everybody that they're exactly where they need to be. The key is the best time to start saving is today. Now, from time to time, we also receive InvestTalk questions from the YouTube comment section of our InvestTalk channel. Here is one that came in, well, it just came in a couple days ago, actually yesterday, and it is on CPT and MAA. It says, I've analyzed some apartment REITs and I've come to the conclusion that Camden Properties Trust, CPT, and Mid-America Apartment Communities, MAA, might be among the best ones. I'm not totally sure of this, but it seems that these are among the best within this space. If so, which one do you prefer? All right, let's take a look at CPT first, and we might have to start this now and finish it after the break. So let's try and look at CPT pretty critically. Camden Properties Trust. It is a real estate investment trust with ownership in the apartment REIT space. Its market cap is about $12 billion, so it's a fairly a good size REIT. It's up 15.65% year to date, over the past 52 weeks, only down 1.73% year to date. It's outperforming the S&P 500 and its industry year to date as well. About a 3.7% dividend yield. Its sales growth looks pretty solid, about 8.4% on an annualized basis over the past 6 years. And its price to funds from operation is below its five-year average, so it may be a little cheap relative to where it has been over the past 5 years. Now, they operate about 59,000 apartment homes all over major markets, so it is fairly well diversified. And from a technical perspective, it does look pretty solid as well, especially, you know, over the one-year time frame. Now, as I said, we won't have time to answer this question fully before we go to the break, so we'll get back to the rest of it when we come back from this break. But I do want to tell you that on the next InvestTalk, we will look into this question. Why should I care if the U.S. dollar falls? A decline in the US dollar can affect prices, investments, and travel costs, making it important to understand how these changes might influence your everyday life. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, Wednesday, April 30th. It's all happening online, and it's free. Pre-register now at investtalk.com.
So before the break, we were answering a YouTube question about ticker CPT, Camden Property Trust versus Mid-America Apartment Communities, ticker MAA. And so CPT was about a $12 billion REIT that had been performing pretty well relative to the industry, had solid revenue growth, and was trading underneath its five-year average of price to funds from operation. Now, MAA, Mid-America Apartment Communities, is also a real estate investment trust that specializes in apartment REITs. Revenue pretty solid, about 6% growth over the past 6 years. PFFO, about 17.8 lower than it's been over the past 6 years, and it's up 25% over the past year, while being up 3.2% year-to-date, so outperforming. And so these are both in the similar space. They're going to be affected by similar things. But within the apartment REIT space, one of the things that is very beneficial for a company for which you want to invest is diversification. Mid-America holding up better, revenue growth solid, pretty decent valuation, more diversification. So if I had to choose... Now we'll get to one of my next talking points in just a few minutes, but first let's roll in another listener question.
Hi, InvestTalk. I was calling in with a question on the stock Nike. The symbol is NKE. Wanted to get your thoughts. I know it's lost value from its high and now down to like about $55. I was wondering what would be a good entry point and if it would be a good time to buy or something to stay away from. Just wondering, would you consider this stock as a value stock now? Thank you for your time, and I'll be listening to the answer on your show.
So taking a look at Nike, ticker NKE. It is a name we did hold for clients at one point. I believe we sold out of it just before last earnings when it dropped off pretty significantly. And that's because they had poor revenue, but also poor forward-looking guidance. And the tariff mess has certainly not helped companies such as Nike either. Down about 38.96% over the past 52 weeks, down 24% year to date, down 22% over the past 3 months. And honestly, it doesn't look like there's much of a reprieve on the horizon for this name. And even with that, it's still trading about 6x price to book value, which is near the bottom end of its range over the past 5 years. But just because a company's stock has fallen doesn't mean it's necessarily a value stock. Nike faces a lot of pressure. Pressure on margins, pressure on sales from being cut out of Asian markets. And that is one of the reasons, really the overarching reason, why the company's stock has been performing so poorly year to date. And so given the tensions have not really started to ease much, given the prolonged nature of what is likely to come, there still seems to be a little bit of risk to the downside for Nike. And so for now, we're staying away from it. And I also would suggest you stay away from it as well. That is ticker NKE, Nike Inc. Thanks for the call. Now, speaking of tariffs, and certainly if you paid attention to the market wrap-up, or if you've been paying attention to the markets over the past couple days, you'll know that there's been a little bit of relief rebound. And that's on the signs that the president may cut Chinese tariffs by as much as 50%, though important to note, he also may not. But either way, it shows that there is a little bit of thought around potentially easing off a little bit. But you also have to understand the erratic nature of policy is damaging in and of itself. And so what you may be starting to see is a risk premium emerging, where investors are beginning to apply a discount to U.S. assets due to concerns about this unpredictability, but concerns about threats to Fed independence as well. You know, this is a pretty historic investor shift. Global fund managers in December were about as overweight U.S. equities as they've ever been. And now, in April, they're at a record underweight. That is a massive shift over the course of 4.5 months. And this is critical because equities really do rely pretty heavily on foreign flows. Overseas investors now hold $18.6 trillion in U.S. equities. Back in 2011, that was only $3.8 trillion. And so now they're accounting for 1/3 of total U.S. market cap, U.S. equity market cap. That's far more than treasuries, which I think people think about, in terms of foreign investors holding U.S. treasuries. Foreign ownership of treasuries has declined from 44% to 25% of the market, despite a nominal increase in terms of dollars of the holdings. And so equities are highly sensitive to sentiment. They're highly sensitive to capital flows. They are highly sensitive to foreign selling pressure. And if foreign selling pressure continues, if U.S. assets become less desirable, sure, the bond market's going to suffer, but the equity market stands to suffer dramatically. And that's with the dollar risk rising. Foreign asset shifts could manifest themselves in exchange rate differences, especially if there's expectation of Fed policy shifts. But more than anything, flows matter. Now, despite all of this, if you take a look at the 10-year yield, it's still below where it was in February. And so there isn't yet an indication that foreign investors are starting to see default risks within the U.S. debt market. But the long-term threat is still here. Without consistent foreign inflows, the U.S. is likely to struggle sustaining the elevated stock valuations that we have today, especially if confidence in U.S. institutions continue to erode. Let's keep things moving and play another listener question. This next call came in earlier from Minnesota.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Steve from St. Paul. I bought AGCO about a year ago, AGCO, and I'm down about 30%. And I think this is, I've ever heard people call about this company a couple times, and you know, you think it's a fundamentally sound company. I do too, but I just don't see any way for it to perform well in the next, you know, call it year or two, given the current environment in the U.S. And so I was thinking about just taking my loss here and moving the money to Kubota in Japan or CNH in the U.K. And I was leaning towards CNH just because they have slightly less exposure to the U.S. market. Or would you say I should just avoid agricultural equipment for a while? Either way, I think it's probably smart for me to get out of AGCO, but I'll be curious to see what you think, and I certainly won't do it until I hear my answer on the show. Thanks for everything you do.
That's a great question. So ticker AGCO, AGCO Corporation, it is a leader in designing, manufacturing, and distributing agricultural machinery and agricultural technology. Now, over the past 52 weeks, it's down about 30%, down 11.93% year to date, down 21% over the past 3 months. And you can see here from 2023 to 2024, revenue slipped from about $14.4 billion to about $11.6 billion. Net margins turned negative, though they are projected to go positive again. And it's still trading at about 18 times forward-looking earnings in spite of all of that. That's up 60 basis points today, underperforming the rest of the market. But I think what you are highlighting is an important thing. And that's because in spite of, or rather alongside of the threat of tariffs, you also have an issue with the global slowdown. And so it is facing headwinds from commodity prices, from slowing global demand. It also has a decent amount of debt, about $2.8 billion on $6.1 billion market cap. And so you have all of these things that are coming together such that with the global headwinds, there are likely better places for you to put your money. Now, I do like the idea that you want to move a little bit more exposure internationally. I think international diversification, especially given the climate that we're in with trade tensions, is beneficial for your portfolios. That's across the board. But I will say that even if you were to invest in a UK or Japanese agricultural machinery company, it's still going to face some of those same global headwinds. So if you want to sell out of this name, I think that's perfectly fine. I think in the short to medium term, you're not really going to see it breaking through given those global headwinds. And international diversification sounds great, but maybe look outside of agricultural machinery. Thanks for the call. All right. So one other thing that I think is important, because it is a signal of the health of an economy, is delinquencies. And I don't mean children that aren't acting appropriately in school, but I really mean credit card delinquencies. And they've started to return to pre-pandemic levels. And that's prompting issuers to prepare for a world where they have more losses than they've had over the past couple years. Major players like JPMorgan Chase and Citigroup are starting to bolster what's called their loan loss reserves in anticipation of an outcome where they don't want to have issues with cash flow in the business or issues that affect their bottom line too much. Now, the best way to work through this in times of economic uncertainty isn't to prepare for losses, but to prevent them in the first place. And so what you're starting to see is tightening credit standards. Synchrony Financial, which historically gives to subprime borrowers, is starting to reduce its exposure to that category. U.S. Bancorp is starting to shift towards wealthier clientele as well. And so when you add on top of this, the trade war, which hasn't yet impacted lender earnings, a financial firm, lowered consumer spending, right? People have less money to spend, but also higher inflation. Things start to cost more. And so what you're already starting to see, and you've started to see it over the past couple months, is consumers are still spending, right? But they're not spending as much on the discretionary categories, which are things that they're more likely to finance with their credit cards, on travel, on entertainment, on dining, on shopping. And so this is where you start to see the early signs of slowing. Minimum payments are also rising, meaning people are taking on more debt, meaning people have to make more payments monthly because they can't pay down their current balances. And a lot of this spending is driven by confidence. If you don't have a lot of money and there are still necessities you need to buy, if you think that they're going to be more expensive tomorrow, you're more likely to buy them on credit today, which exacerbates the problem. And so some of these companies are starting to favor premium cards, right? You already have had the market dominated by your Amex Platinums, by your Chase Sapphire Reserves. And so companies like US Bancorp, like Capital One, are starting to move into this space to create cards to bolster their business that cater to more wealthy clientele who are less likely to default on their balances, right? Offering them, the companies, a little bit of an economic buffer when things start to turn downward. American Express, which targets those high-income earners, saw a 7% increase in U.S. consumer spending in Q1, when a lot of companies were seeing the opposite direction. And so not only does that reaffirm the growth outlook of a company like American Express, but it also reaffirms the strategy of these companies trying to move into this market. Now, with the top 10% of earners now responsible for roughly 50% of U.S. spending, 10% of earners for 50% of U.S. spending, it makes sense to me that all of these companies are starting to move into this segment to start to mitigate risk. Now, this is more of a preparation, right? There tends to be a ebb and flow of defaults over time, but these things can cascade. And so anytime you see companies, financial firms, credit card companies, starting to prepare for the worst, well, that's when you need to start paying attention. See if we can keep things moving and at least play a voicemail that we can then answer after the break.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Steve from Oklahoma City. I have a question. Using an app to invest in the stocks, is that a good thing? I was just curious on your thoughts about. Thanks so much for your podcast, and you guys answered a lot of questions. Thank you so much, and have a great day.
So is using an app to invest in stocks a good thing? You know, I think there's good and bad to it. If you're thinking of your Robinhood or even more traditional brokerages on your phone, using those to trade, I think the good thing is you make it very liquid, right? You can access it on your phone. If you need to sell something, you need to buy something, you can go ahead and do it. Makes the transparency even better as well. But there's also some downsides, right? If you have easy access to something, you can be more impulsive. You can start to buy, sell things without doing the appropriate research to make sure if it's right for you. Some of these companies that offer zero commission, zero brokerage fees, they got to make money somehow. So maybe they're sitting on trades, they're widening spreads, and you're paying in a way that's less easy to see. And so there's a risk there. Maybe there's payment for order flow. And so you still have to be careful and realize that not all phone app trading is going to be made the same. You also could have limited tools on the phone versus the desktop app. You also could have higher threats to security because phones are more easily hackable than doing it at home or having a professional do it. And so with everything, there's costs and benefits. Understand the risks, understand the benefits as well. All right, we got one more break. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
April is Financial Literacy Month. For a limited time, you can receive the first 3 months of the KPP Premium Newsletter free. Sign up now at investtalk.com and use the code KPPFLM. And now the phone lines are open, waiting for your questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, KPP Financial. Thank you very much for your show. And this is Yannick from Denmark. I appreciate your answer to my question last show. I have another question regarding the bonds. Since I'm now looking for short-term bonds following your suggestion, it's the ticker ERND, iShares dollar sign ultra short bond usage ETF. Would you have any issues with this bond ETF? Its maturity range is mostly 1 to 3 years. The alternative is Vanguard USD treasury bonds, but that should be the safest choice, right? So like your comment on treasuries versus corporate bonds at this time, in particularly this ultra short bond fund. Thank you very much. Bye.
So ticker ERND, it's a UCIT. It's not US, it's a non-US fund. It's domiciled in the UK. And it is an ultra short bond ETF that invests in investment grade ultra short bonds, right? It is the component securities of the Market iBoxx USD Liquid Investment Grade Ultra Short Index. And so it's relatively cheap, about 9 basis points. That's certainly one thing that we like here. Maintains an effective duration of approximately, looks like 0.37 years, and an effective maturity of about 0.57 years. So it is on the lower end of the duration scale. Now, because it is invested in investment grade bonds versus treasuries, you know, you are going to get a little bit higher yield there because you are taking on higher credit risk. But in a time when spreads are still pretty narrow, even though they've widened a little bit, they're still narrow in terms of historical ranges, it makes sense a little bit to take on some of that credit risk to get a little bit of extra yield there. Now, with that being said, you are in Denmark. This is also an unhedged fund, meaning that if you invest in it, you are exposing yourself to dollar risk as well. And that's a consideration to have. Some funds that are going to be funds such as this, maybe they're international funds that invest in US equities, US fixed income, what have you, they're going to be hedged, meaning they're going to deal with the fact that currencies fluctuate and that's not going to affect your return. That's not the case here. So I think this is a perfectly fine fund for you to invest in if you're looking for US investment grade bonds. Just keep in mind, unhedged, you do have currency risk inherent to the fund. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head out, you know, we talked a little bit about how the Treasury Secretary mentioned the unsustainability of trade tensions between the US and China, right? Likening it to an embargo. And we've already started to see potentially there's going to be a shift from the White House, potentially reducing tariffs by as much as 50%, but in traditional, typical fashion, there's a little bit of non-committal there as well, right? It's not something that will be unilaterally done, but only done if they see the makings of a fair deal. And so when you see market movements like this over the past couple of days, and you see these large positive swings on the potential news, you have to keep in mind, this is all at this point conjecture. Could it happen? Sure. Could it not happen? Also sure. At this stage, there is a lot of rhetoric. But there's also a lot of real-world fallout. German shipper Hapag-Lloyd said 30% of its U.S.-bound shipments from China have been canceled due to the tariffs. The EU's warned that it would retaliate with counter-tariffs if there is no deal by July 9th. The IMF warned that tariffs will slow global growth, and raise public debt burdens worldwide. And so as an investor, when you hear of news that makes markets move in any direction, understand that it doesn't mean the risk is gone. The risk is still very much present. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And remember, while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. If you're interested, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number. We can also help you optimize the potential of your 401k and build you a full financial plan. If any of that sounds interesting to you, just head over to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. As always, it is a free and confidential service. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.